Hey, everybody. Welcome to Change Starts Here, Research Conversations. I'm Kim Yars, and I am here with my colleague, Jennifer Chevalier. And we are so excited for this live event, here to talk about a conversation topic that is near and dear to our hearts, leveraging the power perspective to address educational challenges. So housekeeping issue before we get started. Because this is a live event, this is an opportunity for you to drop in and give us questions. So wherever you're listening from, if anything crops up for you, definitely drop your question in the chat. And at the end of the conversation, we're going to have some time for Q&A. So definitely do that. So let's go ahead and get started. In preparation for today's conversation, we put out a poll question on social media where we were asking educators to share which of the following issues they were most impacted by. So we were asking about things like student engagement, student apathy, disruptive student behavior, poor student attendance, high rates of student anxiety and depression, and poor academic achievement.
Awesome. So let's go ahead and talk about the results. And just to clarify, the poll questions were designed to allow respondents to mark one issue or both issues or no issues as being a challenge impacting their school. So when we combine the both figures with the individual figures, we see that 76% report poor academic achievement and 65% report high rates of student anxiety and depression. In the middle section, we see there that 86% of respondents reported disruptive student behavior and 44% report poor student attendance. But national statistics actually put that number much higher. And then lastly, on the far side, we see that 53% of our poll responders reported low student engagement and 69% report student apathy.
So, Jennifer, I'm curious to know what these results say to you. I know that you've been someone who has worked in and around education for a long time. Does this feel similar or different to what you'd expect to see?
Honestly, Kim, this feels different to me, just the sheer magnitude of it. The data here indicate that our educators are facing tremendous challenges, and nearly every challenge is pervasive in nearly every setting. So, to me, these data paint a clear picture of why many educators are overwhelmed, burned out, and leaving the profession. Yeah. So I just want to take a moment to say thank you to those of you who are standing in the gap for our nation's students and working tirelessly to support them. We truly applaud your dedication and commitment.
Yes, completely agreed. And, you know, I agree that the magnitude does feel different. Yet, in some ways, it feels very familiar to me. I found myself thinking back and remembering my early days as a classroom teacher, and I think that I would have said then that an issue like student behavior was a real challenge for me. I kind of felt like I was the queen of behavior modification. Sticker charts, marble jars, you know, all in service of addressing attentiveness or disruptive behaviors, which makes me wonder now, was I treating the wrong problem?
Yes, I think those strategies were so common a decade ago, Kim. So thankfully, we've all learned
more
a
than
lot.
A decade ago.
Yeah, maybe more than a decade ago. But let's circle back to what you said at the end there, that you may have been treating the wrong problem with those strategies. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So this brings to mind a personal story, right? When my younger son was almost 11, we took him to Israel. And about three quarters of the way through the trip, we had visited lots of historic sites, including a Holocaust museum. And at this point in the trip, he was complaining that his ear was hurting and he had a history of ear problems, derailing vacations. So I was really worried that he was going to burst an eardrum. And so we called a doctor who came to our hotel room I'm like, that in and of itself was a unique experience. And when the doctor showed up, he was kind of like more shaman than doctor. And right away, he started speaking directly to my son, which was, my son was not used to that, right? You know, the doctor spoke to mom. And he really was giving him a very thorough examination. And all the while he's examining him, he was talking to Nathan about what he had been doing in Israel. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, it's his ear. Just look in his ear. What's going on? And at the very end, he looks at his ear and he said, both of his ears are completely fine. Oh. And I was shocked. I was sure that, you know, we were heading to the pharmacy and going to get an antibiotic, right? Mm-hmm. But he explained to me that what he thought was going on with my son was something that is known as referred pain. Now, at the time, this was a completely new concept to me. But when he explained it, he said, sometimes bodies perceive pain in a location other than the place where the actual injury or cause of pain is coming from. Hmm. So the pain in my son's ear was covering up his real pain, which I now think was a pain in his heart.
Whoa. Okay. That's really profound. Gosh, I can't imagine a doctor experience like that here in the U.S. Usually it's like, here's a prescription, see you later. No. But I think what you just shared, Kim, is helping me understand that we all cope with stress and trauma differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to this example, it can affect our physical well-being. It can certainly affect our mental well-being and our behavior. So you got me thinking, if he had just written, you know, a prescription, he'd be treating the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So if we treat the wrong thing, we won't get the results that we actually want. And so a lot of times I think we jump in to fix things. Mm-hmm. But when we do that, we might be addressing the wrong thing altogether. So what we need to do is slow down, just like this doctor did, and seek to deeply understand the issue.
Yeah, it was, I mean, such a profound experience, right? Mm-hmm. So when I think about this, it was kind of like this, right? When I was looking at my son's ear pain, it was like I was seeing it through this narrow keyhole, and I could only see one way that it could be treated, antibiotics. But when this doctor entered the picture, it's like he opened up this keyhole much, much wider, and he helped me to see something that I just couldn't see before. His heart hurt because he was processing all of this painful information about what people experienced during the Holocaust. You know, and it's just like stuck with me. And I think about it alongside like an issue like student behavior, you know, that I experienced as a classroom teacher. And it makes me wonder if those behaviors that I was seeing in my classroom and perhaps the ones that teachers see today could have been symptomatic of something else.
Wow. I love the keyhole imagery. That is such a great way to just make this concept visual and help us all remember. And it's bringing to mind the see, do, get cycle, which is a core component of Leader in Me. We usually explain this cycle from start to end. So we start at the top. What we see influences what we do, and in turn impacts the results we get. And this is relevant in education or really any context, school-related, work-related, or on your personal life. So I want to take a moment and look at the see-do-get cycle in reverse. I think we really need to begin by examining if we are getting the outcome that we want in a certain area. And if the answer is no, then we need to consider why. I think that we can agree that we must not be doing the right things. And if we're doing the right things, then we would get the right outcome. But so often, I think this is where we get stuck. We rack our brains and try everything we can think of to get a better outcome. We try and we try and we try, but nothing changes. I think we wear ourselves out. I mean, we see that with the numbers of educators leaving the profession, from classroom teacher to school administrators to district leaders. But I have good news. It is not hopeless.
Everybody wants good news.
Right? At Franklin Covey, we have found through research and experience that to know what to do differently, we need to change how we see the situation. It's actually the paradigm or the belief that we hold that is shaping what we do and the outcome we get. So if we don't adjust our beliefs about an issue, then we will keep doing the things that don't work. Ultimately, we have to adjust our paradigms, our beliefs, to get the desired outcome.
You know, I love that you're making that see, do, get connection. Our paradigms, the way we see our students, our challenges, definitely do impact our actions and subsequently our results. You know, okay, so it makes me want to back up, go back to when I was a younger teacher and say, okay, so what was I doing when I was looking at something like student behavior, for example, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we go into a concrete example, I just want to define a couple terms that we're going to use here. The terms are limiting paradigm and maximizing paradigm. A limiting paradigm is a belief that is holding progress back. So conversely, a maximizing paradigm is a belief that allows for growth and improvement. So now let's go back to looking at student behavior, which in our poll, 86% of the people marked as a challenge impacting their school. So significant. Mm-hmm. I would say some examples of limiting paradigms about student behavior are, my students don't want to be here. This generation has no respect. Parents just aren't doing their jobs.
Can I just interject and say, and when I was a teacher, way back when, I know that these were some of the things that I sometimes thought. Hmm. So full disclosure.
I think we can all put ourselves in that category at some point. So, you know, with a limiting paradigm like these, what we try to do is control bad behavior. We're reactionary. We focus on behavior modifications, like you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. We do referrals, detentions, suspensions, sticker charts, marble jars, prize boxes. And what we get with those strategies at best is short-term success. And we definitely get an over-reliance on external rewards.
Which is completely aligned to what the research reveals about these external, extrinsic approaches to student behavior. You know, that when we overemphasize those extrinsic motivators, it undermines intrinsic motivation. And then, you know, students begin to associate good behavior only with rewards, losing sight of the internal reasons for behaving well, self-respect, respect for others, or personal growth.
Awesome. So first, we just looked at student behavior through the limiting paradigm. So now let's look at it through a maximizing paradigm. What if we could see behavior problems through this lens? Students are inherently good.
They are.
And right? They are. And disruptive behaviors are symptomatic of other things going on with students, just like your example of your son. With that paradigm, then we might do things differently. For example, we would seek to understand rather than control. We would inquire about students' well-being, respond with curiosity, and offer support rather than punishment.
Mm.
If we did that, then I think what we would get is stronger relationships between students and their teachers, increased student engagement, less conflict and violence, less disruptions to learning, and increased cooperation.
Okay, so, you know, we're like conjecturing here, but here's the thing. You know, we're saying we could get that, but not only could we get that, we would get that, because that is what research says happens, is that When we positively approach student behavior, it reduces discipline referrals, suspensions, it enhances the school climate, and it leads to improved academic outcomes.
Wow. So it's not theoretical. It's grounded in research, which I love. Is. And, you know, I think this is an important shift in how we perceive student behavior. I think back to my second year of teaching, I had a student who I just adored. But leading up to vacations, her behavior would just change and she would become very disruptive leading up to each school vacation. And I assumed it was the excitement of getting out of school and being on break. But finally, leading up to spring break, I just point blank asked her, like, what is it about vacations that make you act differently? And her answer still puts a lump in my throat 25 years later.
What'd she say?
She shared that there was no food at home. So when she isn't at school, she doesn't get to eat. So her misbehavior was really a manifestation of the stress that was building up in her.
Wow. Like, I don't even know how to respond to that other than to say that feels like another example of referred pain that we were talking about earlier. And it's like, so you were looking through this narrow keyhole and you saw a kid that was excited for vacation. But when you opened it up, you saw the source of this girl's pain, which was very different than what you expected was going on with her. Wow. That is powerful. I just like need to take a second and digest that. Oh my God. You know, like so big, I just don't even know. If I feel funny, you know, just moving on. Like, all right, now let's talk about academic achievement. You know, all right, like, it's like let's try this out. But that example is like so powerful to me that it does make me want to dig into another issue, right? And, you know, how our limiting paradigms might be impacting the results that we get and how shifting a paradigm could change things. All right. So let's talk about academic achievement, right? So because we know that this was another one of those that had a really big percentage of people saying, yeah, this is a big issue in our schools. So when we think about looking through that narrow keyhole, we might see students, you know, looking at them, thinking about academics, we might say, see students who can't, or they're not smart enough, or they're not disciplined enough, or, you know, there's things going on at home that interfere with learning, right? So we might see all of those things, right? And with that paradigm, what is the action that follows? So in a lot of cases, it could be a focus on bolstering basic skills, you know, where we talk to students about their grades, we're super concerned about how they're going to perform on the test. So we do a lot of test prep, right? And so oftentimes, all too often, we take this approach and it's so frustrating because the scores don't budge. Mm-hmm. We now have another problem. Students seem disengaged. They're acting out. You know, and it feels like we're just kind of going on this round for round cycle and not really solving the problem.
I know I've been on that cycle myself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's strange, too, because I'm remembering when one of my sons was in eighth grade. I had a paradigm of him being a great student, right? Like, I thought he could. And I was talking to him all the time about how he was doing in school. And one day he said to me, I feel like you only love me if I get good grades. I know. Right?
Yes.
So my paradigm was definitely impacting my son. It was a real eye-opening moment for me as a parent.
Gosh, I wonder how many of us have made our kids feel like that without intending to.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really relatable. And I think it'll make all of us just be a little more careful about what we're emphasizing. Okay, well, so back to your example here about academics. When we look at what research says about the impact of teacher expectations on academic achievement, we see that it actually has a huge effect on student performance. So according to Hattie, the effect size is 1.3. And if you're someone who's like unfamiliar with Hattie and effect sizes, you might be like, what does that mean? 1.3 doesn't sound like much.
Oh, that's big.
1.3 is actually more than 3 times the threshold for something having a positive impact. So it is very significant. So what does this research mean? Essentially, if the teacher believes a student can and communicates that, then the student does. And if the teacher believes the student can't and either verbalizes it or just demonstrates it through actions, then the student won't perform well academically.
All right. All right. So now here we have an opportunity to open up that aperture on that keyhole a little bit wider and say, okay, you have just suggested to us we approach our students with the paradigm of they can do this, okay? It doesn't matter their personal circumstances. Kids are smart, they are curious, and they are motivated to do well, right? So we approach it like that's all I can see when I look at my students. So what does this lead to, right? Well, we trust them. So we'll plan fun and engaging lessons. We focus on critical thinking and problem solving because they can do it, right?
Right.
And we feed their curiosity. We give them engaging work. And the process becomes more important than the product. And that's what we communicate to students. And as a result, it increases the psychological safety and engagement, right? Which are other problems that we sometimes face in our classrooms.
Absolutely. And to tie in research here, Christine Ruby Davis found that when teachers have high expectations for all students, there is a direct correlation to improved academics.
No doubt. No, you know, I would have guessed that, and I am not surprised by that research at all. All right, so how do we go about creating positive, lasting change?
That is such a big question, isn't it? But I think we have at least some thoughts to share around this. So I think if we believe in the principle that change starts with me, if each of us took that posture, change starts with me, then each of us must identify and challenge our own thinking and our own limited paradigms first. What do we hear ourselves saying and what are we thinking about? And if we model for others how we are challenging our own limiting paradigms, then we can help others develop an awareness and shift their own. I think education leaders can note limiting paradigms they are hearing their staff say, and they can use them as full staff workshops focused on replacing those limiting beliefs with maximizing paradigms to empower their teams. So, Kim, do you want to take a minute and walk us through what that might look like?
Yeah. So we have this vision where teams of teachers or staffs come together during a staff meeting and you take these questions that you see here on the screen, right? First, you identify the issue and then you ask, in what ways might we be viewing this issue with limitations that prevent us from seeing the full complexity of potential solutions? And then be real honest with you. Like, I've been honest with y'all today, right? You know, it's hard, but we can do it and say, what might we be doing that is, you know, what actions or decisions might we be taking based on this limited view? And then, you know, what's happening because of this? And then shift the conversation to the possibility, right? Open up the aperture just wider and ask yourself, what perspectives or possibilities might we be missing that could help us see this issue in a more complete or expansive way. And then think about, well, if we saw it this way, what would we do differently? And then imagine the results that could happen of seeing it that way.
Wow, that's powerful. I think that this is a really clear process, and, you know, it'll probably take some practice for people to get right. I'm looking at it myself and trying to reflect on, you know, some things that I think or say that maybe I should start questioning, but it's so great to have a process like that to start doing that. And I think it could lead to a lot of team building when we get real and get open and honest with each other about some of the things that we think and start to shift our perspectives. Just imagine the outcomes we could get when we do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're coming to the end of what we were thinking about today, and I'm just curious if we've had any questions come from, you know, I know we did say drop them in the chat. Take a minute now if you have any questions. We'd love to hear from you.
I see something from Trisha. How do you deal with the super negative teacher?
Ooh. Yeah, it's, you know, it's real. And the first thing that I want to say is we need to start there with compassion for that person too, right? So I think it starts with our paradigm about people. You know, there's a backstory. And just in the same way that a disruptive child has a backstory, or poor academic performance could have a backstory, you know, something that we're not seeing, we could start with there saying, what else might be going on?
That's a great thought, Kim. It makes me think back to an experience I had with a teacher who I would put sort of in that category, and trying to figure out how to get along with her. And one day she just said something really rude to me. And instead of responding defensively or coming back at her, I just stopped for a second because those strategies I tried and they didn't work. And I just said, are you okay?
Yeah.
And she just burst into tears. And I was like, whoa, okay. So that, you know, that's a great example that a lot of times there's more going on. You know, she is a single mom. She had two kids. And the rent on her apartment had gone up like every 6 months for about a year and a half. And she was at the point where she was literally going to become homeless. So you could imagine the stress that she was under and how that was bleeding over into how she was behaving in the workplace. And so that I love that that was what you pointed to. And I think that example really does substantiate that. There are also people that are struggling with mental health issues that, you know, none of us on this call are equipped to address necessarily. And so sometimes people need some kind of external resources to help them. And building administrators or district leaders can help coordinate some of those supports. So great question.
I love that question. Mm-hmm. But I feel like compassion is always the answer.
Okay, that is the only question I see from our audience. Trisha just put in a second question. I feel like team building is so important, and Trisha, I agree. Are there Leader in Me resources for that? So I would point to everything around our habit of synergy, right, and learning how to work together. And really highlighting each person's strengths in a way that it's for the greater good of the team. So I would ask you to lean into that habit of synergy and look at the resources associated with that. Is there anything you want to add there, Kim?
You did a great job with that. Thanks, Jen.
Sure. Okay. I think that is it.
We are coming to right down to the 30-minute mark, so...
Great. We just want to thank you so much for joining us with this live event associated with our podcast, Change Starts Here, Research Conversations. And if you don't already follow that podcast, make sure to like and subscribe to it. Thanks again.
Thanks for coming.